You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the Wolverine Confidential Podcast. I am Andrew Kahn.
I'm Ryan Zook.
And I'm Aaron McMahon.
In a game that lived up to the hype, the Michigan football team delivered a thrilling win over Ohio State to complete a perfect 12-0 regular season and advance to the Big Ten Championship. We break down all the key moments from the game and the post-game scene and look ahead to Iowa in the playoffs coming up on Wolverine Confidential. All right, guys, good to be here with you Monday morning, November 27th, after Michigan beats Ohio State 30-24 on Saturday at Michigan Stadium. Just kind of a very brief recap of the game here, though I think our listeners probably watched it. But Michigan gets an interception deep in Ohio State territory early, which leads to the first score of the game, a touchdown. Michigan goes up 7-0. It was 14-3 after Roman Wilson's catch that withstood replay review, 14-10 at half, 17-17 late in the third quarter. And then Michigan took 7 minutes off the clock and got a field goal to go up 30-24 with a minute left. Ohio State was driving, hit a couple of long pass plays before Rod Moore's interception sealed the game. And guys, this was my favorite kind of football game, because it was competitive, you know, close throughout. Points weren't easy to come by, but it wasn't just a punt fest either, you know what I mean? And it's one that went down to the final possession.
I think it was everything I thought it would be. You know, I came into the game not like I wasn't definitive on either side of the ball. I didn't have a good feeling, and it really kind of lived up to my expectations, at least for me. You know, if it's weird, if you would have told me before the game that, you know, Ohio State would have outgained Michigan and averaged 6.5 yards per play, I would have probably told you Michigan would have lost. But at the end, they just made more plays. You know, you mentioned the interception by Will Johnson that set them up for an easy touchdown. The catch from Roman Wilson there in the end zone. I mean, that long field goal that took time off the clock. Michigan just did more. They made more plays, and they came up big in those big moments. And ultimately, that's what, you know, what determined the game.
Yeah, I mean, it did seem like there were some lulls early, and it was like, man, is this going to be a kind of a snooze fest game? And the second half definitely delivered. And if you're a Michigan fan, like, you got to love how the offense kind of made some adjustments and kind of turned things on in the second half, scored on all four of their drives in the second half, not including the final kneel down. Special teams. I mean, how many times have we, over the past couple of years, where we're like, well, Jake Moody might have won that game for Michigan, and then we haven't really, they haven't had to rely on special teams and James Turner's leg at all this year, and he came through on Saturday, and yeah, well, like you said, you couldn't have asked for a more exciting finish at the end. I mean, a minute left to go, needing a touchdown with the game on the line, and I mean, just peak interest level for both sides. And it definitely delivered and was a thrilling finish.
Michigan wins the turnover battle 2-0. We mentioned now both interceptions. Will Johnson had the early one when Kyle McCord tried to force the ball to Marvin Harrison Jr. and then Rod Moore's at the end. And they outgained Ohio State on the ground, 156-107. That was something we talked about extensively on the pregame podcast. We had it in our roundtable chat.
The streak lives.
The streak lives. I mean, the team that wins the rushing battle, you know, generally wins this game. And it was, you know, the main thing that Ryan Day said after the game. Like, you could talk about all these other things you want. They outgained us on the ground, and they beat us in the turnover battle. That's what they said. And those were just so key for Michigan, not just in this game, but all season to get to 12-0.
Yeah, 22 carries, 88 rushing yards for Blake Corum, 2 touchdowns. I mean, he set Michigan's single season rushing touchdown record. You know, they, in a way, they've been kind of setting him up for games like these. You know, we talked all season about maybe how little or how fewer carries he was getting compared to previous, like last year. Well, I mean, they let him go Saturday. You know, he had more than 20 carries. They leaned on him when they needed to. That run, that touchdown run, the play after Zach Zinner got injured and had to be carted off the field, helped obviously, you know, sway the game. So Corum showed up. Donovan Edwards, you know, did what was asked of him, 10 carries, 31 yards. But maybe the play of the game for him was that long 24 yard pass to Colston Loveland there, or excuse me, 34 yard long on the pitch. So,
should have been a touchdown if he put a little bit more air under it and got a little extra yards on it too. But I digress.
Yeah. So, I mean, both running backs came to play. I mean, they did what was asked of them. You know, there wasn't, you know, nothing spectacular, but they got the job done. And it really showed there in that late drive there that, like you guys were talking about, turned 7 minutes off the clock. They showed up when they had to. And this is really, you know, we talked about it going in. Blake had been banged up the last 2 years for this game. So he was really looking forward to this, to kind of stamping and leaving a legacy for him in his final game in the Big House. And he certainly did that.
It's funny because on the third quarter Ohio State touchdown drive where they marched down the field 75 yards to tie that 17, that looked like a Michigan S drive to me. They were, I mean, running the rock down Michigan's throats and just wearing out that Michigan defense. And it's like, wow, maybe Ohio State's finally finding something on the ground here in a tied game. And then, like Aaron said, that final drive where they were able to take 7 minutes off the clock, Michigan says, hold my beer, and drains it down as late as they can and kicks a field goal to go up 6 and leaves little time for the Buckeyes to make a late comeback. So it was some tough yards a lot of times for Corum and Edwards, but when they needed to, they got it done. And that Corum touchdown run right after Zach Sinner's injury, I mean, that's also a huge turning point in the game. Obviously, it was tough for these players and fans and everyone to see Zinder carted off and with a serious injury, and then to score on the next play without their best offensive lineman, in my opinion, says a lot about the resiliency of this team, and it was a huge turning point in this one.
Michigan seemingly had a response for every time Ohio State scored, and I think that's like the backbone of a good team, right? If you can hang in there with a team at your level, and every time they score, every time they put points on the board, that you have some type of response, and it seemed like Michigan did on Saturday. And it was the case a couple of weeks ago against Penn State as well. So Michigan has shown that, you know, back against the wall when they're being, you know, when they're being tested, that they've been able to, they've had a response every time. So Sherrill Moore, the acting head coach and play caller, deserves a lot of credit on Saturday. I thought he called the best game he has all season long. He did a really good job. He was aggressive when he needed to. He dialed back when he had to, and he made the right decisions when to go for it, when to kick a field goal. And you know, really, he put the players, and we hear this all the time from coaches, you know, coaching us all about putting your players in the best position to be successful. And I thought Sherrill did that against the Buckeyes.
You guys mentioned the, you know, halfback pass, which is becoming, I guess, a staple in this game for Michigan. Donovan Edwards throwing this one. And, you know, there was Alex Orji, you know, a deep reserve at quarterback coming in and rushing for 20 yards on one play. They kept him in for the next snap, which, I mean, right away I was thinking, all right, you're pushing your luck, Michigan. You got the big gain. What I think Ohio State's going to be ready for this one. He runs it again, and I, you know, he only picks up a yard or two, I think. But yeah, still a little wrinkle, you know, here and there, and, you know, going for it and, you know, successfully on fourth down a few times. Ohio State kind of, you know, their decisions could be second guessed because they didn't work out. You know, going for the long field goal, you know, at the end of the first half doesn't work, and, you know, a couple of other decisions. And you might have guessed that the less experienced head coach was actually the more experienced head coach in Sherrill Moore, kind of outdueling Ryan Day in this game.
Yeah, the orgy, going back to the orgy thing, you know, that was really what they tried doing a couple of years ago with JJ. You know, when Cade was a starter, JJ would come in for certain packages, and they've almost duplicated that with Orji, except Orji is 6'3", 236 pounds, and really difficult to tackle. So part of me wonders if they were going to roll with him as long as, Ohio State, see how long it took up Ohio State to tackle him and break him down. Obviously, it only lasted two plays, but more importantly, the first play made a difference. It got Michigan's offense jump started there to start the third quarter. It got them into field goal range, and they ultimately kicked a field goal there to take a 10-point lead. So it certainly made a difference. And then, as we mentioned earlier, the pass from Donovan Edwards, Colton Loveland set up another field goal. So, I thought Sherrone did a great job. Ryan Day is under a lot of heat right now, as he probably should be. He's had a fantastic record at Ohio State. He's done a great job there, but he just can't seem to beat Michigan, no matter how hard he tries. And Saturday, it came at the expense of Sherrone Moore and Jim Harbaugh-less Michigan football team.
It's kind of funny how the narrative heading in this game, and after the Notre Dame game, like Ryan Day went off and blasted Lou Holtz for questioning his team's toughness, and you thought this would be an opportunity where they can go out and improve that. And second drive of the game, they get a fourth and one, just needing a yard, and they were in their own territory, but not super deep. And it's like, all right, well, make a statement early in the game, go for it, and kind of try and put your foot on the neck of Michigan early and make a statement. And they decided to punt there, and it was costly. And again, like settling at the end of the half for a long, long, long field goal, just you had 40 seconds left, 38 seconds left to try and pick up the first down and maybe go down and score a touchdown and take the lead heading into halftime, which would be a huge momentum swing, especially when Michigan hits the ball to start the third quarter. And they just let the clock wind down and settle for a 52-yard field goal that really didn't come that close. So, I don't know. It's easy to second guess because they didn't work out. But, Sherrone's been shown that he's been aggressive, and it's paid off in the games he's been acting head coach.
I will say this, and I'm not trying to pick a fight with Roman Wilson, who questioned Ohio State's toughness after the game. But I do think Ohio State looked a little bit better on Saturday. You mentioned that long drive, in the third quarter that looked Michigan-esque, and I thought it was a good job. And they had a couple other lengthy drives too that churned time off the clock. So it seemed like they were trying to play more of a Michigan game, where they were trying to control time of possession and limit possessions and everything else. But I think at the end of the day, there are two reasons Ohio State lost this game. It was obviously one, Ryan Day's conservative nature, especially earlier in the game, but also Kyle McCord and his guest inexperience in these big games. He threw two crucial interceptions that really, the first one switched field position, gave Michigan their lead in the second game, and the second one obviously iced the game. So I don't think McCord played particularly well, and I don't necessarily want to chalk it up to the offensive line either. I think he just made some poor decisions, and he just didn't play very well. And it wasn't the superstar Ohio State quarterbacks that we've seen in years past.
It is funny that you mentioned Roman Wilson. I saw that one of the Ohio State assistant coaches posted on social media after the game commenting about Roman Wilson, saying, "Bro, like, you're not tough. We stole the ball from you in the end zone. You got lucky that it was called a touchdown." So, I kind of found that a little bit amusing, a little bit childish at the same time. But, you can tell this one's hurting for the Buckeyes.
Absolutely. And yeah, that first interception that McCord threw was huge. And, I like to revisit some of the things we said were going to be important in this, game leading up to it. And one of them was, of course, how Michigan defended Marvin Harrison Jr. And he had a great game by, most player standards. He had five catches for 118 yards and a touchdown, where, he did most of the work on it on kind of a crossing route. I think he caught it around the 10-yard line and ran in for a 14-yard touchdown. But Michigan, you knew you weren't going to stop them, but they contained him. They didn't let him, completely break out and have a huge game. Early on, it was Harrison who was being targeted on that throw that Will Johnson jumped the route on. He was never really open, but it seemed like McCord just sort of locked in on Harrison, was determined to throw to him, and did, even when he wasn't open.
Yeah, Michigan did about what you'd expect. You can't really contain someone like that. You just hope to slow him down. As you mentioned, I think he had one catch for 44 yards and basically four catches for 70 the rest of the way. So I thought they did a good job. Will Johnson went down with an injury there in the second half, so obviously that probably impacted some, but you really expected Harrison to show up late. You know, that Ohio State had an opportunity to win the game. I mean, they had the ball with a minute left and down six, and they marched the field for a little bit there. You would have hoped Harrison would have taken over the game at that point. You know, he had a nice catch there. But again, McCourt throws the interception under duress. So I don't know. I thought he was fine. Michigan did about as well as you expect. And really more importantly too, they like limited the other receivers, right? Like Abuka wasn't very effective. He had three catches for 25 yards. Stover had three catches, 42 yards. One of them was a 32 yard catch. So they had their moments, but they weren't able to put them all together. And I think that was probably the difference defensively.
And yeah, with McCourt, I mean, you could definitely tell this was his first game in this rivalry because, I mean, he was not going through any progression at all. It was first read and the ball's out of his hands and no matter if the guy's open or not, it's not like he would see, oh, that guy's covered and then go to a different read and another option. It was, he just didn't look comfortable. I don't know if he expected the Michigan pass rush to be on him within a couple seconds, but yeah, I did not think he played well either, and it was definitely a drop off compared to the CJ Strouds of the world and JT Barrett's and the other top tier Ohio State quarterbacks that Michigan has faced.
You know, Ryan did mention James Turner, Michigan's kicker, but you know, I think it's worth highlighting him again. You know, he goes 3 for 3 in this game. He hits, you know, one from 50. He hits one from 38, and then, you know, a 37-yard field goal that, you know, had all the pressure in the world on it there late. And it was after, you know, not attempting a field goal last week. He had one against Penn State, but it was 22 yards or something like that. It was a chip shot. Like, you know, he hadn't been shelved, but he just hadn't been used a lot in recent weeks. And then to come out here, you know, maybe not terrible conditions, but never ideal this time of year. And go 3 for 3 was clutch.
You could make the case he was the unsung hero of the game. I mean, maybe a case for MVP. I mean, the two field goals at the end ended up being the difference in the game. He kicks a 50-yard field goal, something, you know, we talked all season long about how reliable he was within 40. Well, they threw him out there, you know, to kick a 50-yard field goal. You didn't know what you're going to get. Biggest game of the year, biggest college football game of the year, probably the biggest game of his life. And he looked great. It looked like he'd done it before. He looked like he was in the groove. So he deserves a lot of credit. I don't know if Michigan necessarily expected it out of him, but they got it and ended up being, you know, a difference maker.
If he misses any of those, it's a completely new ball game. I mean, especially that one at the end. If he misses that and it's still a 3-point game, Ohio State doesn't have to push the ball downfield as aggressively as they did. They were already almost in field goal range already. So that's a complete momentum switch there. And and Ohio State missed their long attempt too. So it's those are three key points there. And it's just Michigan seemed to win every little battle statistically that was necessary to win this game.
Yeah, so that final drive, first play, you know, incomplete, but then they hit a 22-yarder to Harrison. They hit a 21-yarder to Julian Fleming. He fumbles it, but Ohio State is right there to jump on it. So now they've got a first and 10, you know, on the Michigan 37-yard line, and that's when, you know, that's when Rod Moore makes the diving interception. They get pressure on McCourt, which was key. I mean, it's key all game. When you've got, you know, receivers as talented as Ohio State, you know, you got to get pressure on the quarterback, or it's just going to be hard for, you know, your defensive backs to hold up for that long. They did, you know, hit on the throw a little bit, and he makes the diving catch. You know, he seemed to know for certainty he caught it, as did his teammates. But when the entire bench erupts and players who were part of the play take their helmet off and the flags start flying, and they decide to review it, it did cross my mind for a moment. Oh boy, if somehow he actually didn't catch this ball, Michigan's going to be in serious trouble with all the penalty yardage that's getting tacked on here.
Yeah, they certainly would have. I mean, Ohio State was moving the football. They could have easily scored a touchdown there and won the game. Luckily, he came up with the big play when they needed it to. Moore's been real reliable the last 2 years. They've leaned on him quite a bit. He's kind of been one of those diamond in the rough recruits, 3-star kid out of the state of Ohio. He's talked a lot about kind of getting passed over by the Buckeyes in the recruiting process, and he's kind of played with a chip on his shoulder as a result. He talked about it after the game and how much he really wanted this one, how much he had been looking forward to it. And then ultimately, you know, he ended up coming up with the game sealing play.
Man, and we talked with Jim Harbaugh yesterday on a Big Ten teleconference, and I asked him like what his reaction was to that final interception, and like, did he get to celebrate with anyone? And he mentioned how he was watching with his wife, and I just can't imagine his reaction there and what he was saying and doing after he saw that interception to know that Michigan's season and championship hopes were still alive, and them beating Michigan or Ohio State without him. I can only imagine what that was like in his household on Saturday afternoon.
Absolutely. And this is what it's supposed to be in this rivalry. Like, you know, having one team dominate for so long isn't really ideal in any way for either side. Like, and it's weird because, you know, if you're a Michigan fan, you never want Ohio State to win, of course, in any individual game you're facing them. And yet you need them to make it a good rivalry, right? I mean, it's kind of like this catch-22. You don't want it to happen, but you need it to happen for it to be good. And now, you know, after, you know, kind of decades of Ohio State dominance, Michigan State has now won three in a row, and, you know, they've taken the upper hand in this rivalry. So this is what it's supposed to be. You know, you can think about already next year, maybe Michigan losing a lot of guys, the game being in Columbus, who knows? But for now, at least, you know, Michigan is back on top in this rivalry, having won three in a row.
I think the fans would probably dispute that notion. I think they would want to win every game and win every game by a lot just for bragging rights. But you're right. I mean, for those of us kind of on the outside, just like wanting competitive, good football, we got it on Saturday. You know, the last 2 years, I mean, Michigan ended up running away with those games, you know, pun intended in a way. So the fact that this came down to the wire, Ohio State could have won it at the very end, and Michigan's defense came up tall. I think it was a perfect way to end the game. Folks had talked about that, you know, everything on the line going in and how the stakes were high and everything else. And while that was all true, I think some of us were wanting a really good down to the wire competitive football game, and we certainly got it.
As far as Ryan Day's concerned, I mean, I don't want to say I feel bad for the guy, but the heat is going to be on him all off season now. And after losing three straight, but you just wonder if that 2020 game wasn't canceled, how much more cachet he might have it with the fan base, knowing that Ohio State probably would have won that game by 40 something points, given the situation in Ann Arbor and how good that team was. And he would be 2-0 to start his career at Ohio State. And then all of a sudden that game gets canceled. Now we lose three in a row. And it's like the sky is falling in Columbus. And I mean, I still think he's a good coach. He's recruiting at a high level, and I don't think he should be fired at this point. I think he should get another shot or two, but it's crazy to think maybe how this rivalry narrative might have shifted if that game was able to be played in 2020.
He is 1-3 against Michigan. He is 38-0 against the rest of the Big Ten. He has not lost another Big Ten game as a head coach. It's incredible to think about. Like, he has a Michigan problem, specifically the last 3 years. It's been wild just to see the flip. You know, before this game, folks may have pointed to, at least Ohio State fans probably pointed to, maybe some of the sign stealing stuff. And I think in a way, Michigan's win on Saturday kind of disputes some of that. You know, Michigan was able to go out there. Connor Steins was not in the sidelines. And Michigan won the game. I mean, fair and square. They were clearly the better team. They made plays when they needed to. And it was a good win. I think it was a win that allowed Michigan to kind of get some of the pressure off of their shoulders. We've talked a lot about it, the off the field stuff, the last few weeks. And since then, since that story broke, Michigan is now 4-0. They returned to the Big Ten championship with a 12-0 record, and there's no reason why they're not going to win Saturday night.
Yeah, so they advance to next Saturday night's Big Ten championship against Iowa. No doubt about that, is the only unbeaten team here in the East. I'm just thinking about, did you guys see what happened with UNLV? Michigan, you know, one of Michigan's non-conference opponents this season. They're going to the Mountain West championship, so maybe that non-conference schedule wasn't as soft as people thought. But did you see how it worked out? There were three teams tied 6-2 at the top of this thing. And there wasn't the traditional tiebreakers didn't work. You know, they one team was 1-1 against the others. One didn't play the other. They had to go to computer rankings. They did an average of just four computer polls, and it spit out the numbers early Sunday morning to decide which two teams would be playing for the championship, and UNLV is one of them. They'll play Boise State. But yeah, it's Michigan Iowa, repeat of the 2021 game. There was a Michigan blowout. This Iowa team has somehow won 10 games. Despite its anemic offense, they do it with defense, special teams, trying to win the turnover battle, things like that, things that Michigan likes to do also, but, they pair it with a, competent, in fact, high level offense. So there's a reason Michigan is a, 20 plus point favorite in this game. My initial thought is like, there's really nothing to gain for Michigan in this game. They don't really need it. All that can happen potentially is injuries and, I don't know, you showing more of your playbook and things like that. I don't know. What's your initial take on this Big Ten championship?
My initial take is the storyline that we all were hoping for before the season has kind of been put to bed. Cade McNamara is not playing. Eric Hall is not playing. Iowa's also without their star linebacker. So, yeah, injuries have really plagued them, yet somehow they've been able to find a way to win 10 games. Top 10 defense still. They're elite on special teams. They got one of the best punters in the country. So it's very Iowa-esque. I think some of us who expected the Iowa offense to maybe get going this year never happened. So I'm expecting probably another lopsided, low-scoring game. The total set at like 35.5 last I looked. Michigan's a 23-point favorite. So odds makers expecting Michigan to win this game, probably something to the effect of 30-3 or something like that. So I don't expect a lot of points from Iowa. I expect Michigan to probably get a big lead early, just like they did a couple of years ago, and coast the rest of the way, because that's probably how it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's a joke of a conference championship game. Like, I can't wait for this new format next year so that we don't have to have this garbage East versus West format where the West team always goes in there and gets blasted by the East representative. Like, this past weekend was the Big Ten championship game. And it's like, it's sad that that game has so much more meaning than the actual conference championship. Like, we could be getting a rematch of Saturday and for the stakes even being higher this week. Instead, we get to go to Indy and watch probably not an exciting football game, and then Michigan goes on to the playoff, and then we get back to more interesting football. So it's,
Iowa is a tricky team. I mean, everything Zook just said is true, but I mean, it's a hard team to move the ball against. Turnover two happens and suddenly you're behind. It's not a team you want to, be playing from behind against. Let's just say, Michigan loses this game. Do you think they would still get into the playoff?
It's a tough question, just because we don't know what else happens around them. If all things stay equal, I would think they'd have a good shot just based off of a pair of top 10 wins. Because remember, Penn State is, I think, in the top 10 again. Ohio State still is. So Michigan does have a pair of top 10 wins, which will help their case. I think it would certainly matter how close the game is, too. Like, if they lose a close one, I think that would make a difference, too. The committee has said they do value the championship games. They do take those into account, so it would matter. I do think they'd probably sneak in. I think there's an outside shot of them potentially getting the number one spot this week. I don't think they're going to, but they're certainly going to get number two. So I do. I'm not ready to write off Iowa. J.J. McCarthy has shown that he could throw interceptions, and he threw a couple of pick sixes last year at TCU, if folks forget. So, and Iowa has a very good defense. So if there's a pick six, and like you said, Iowa can force some turnovers and get good field position, they can put some points on the board. It would come down to Michigan's offense. So yes, probably. You can't get blown out, though, and I don't see a situation where that would occur.
Yeah, I think if Michigan loses, they're most likely done. Because if, let's say, Alabama beats Georgia in the SEC championship, I think there were two SEC teams would be more deserving than Michigan in the conference championship. I think the Pac-12 winner would be more deserving no matter what. If Florida State wins out, I mean, it's hard. They deserve to be in, even though they struggled with Florida. And then Texas. I think Texas, if they win the Big 12, they would have a better resume than Michigan, too, with one loss. And they'd be a conference champion. So to me, it would be hard for me to find a pathway. I mean, I could see them still getting in, but I would say lean that the chances would be closer to no than yes.
I had, said for a while, I think on this podcast, too, that you know, the one seed versus the two seed wasn't a huge deal, especially for Michigan. They were going to likely end up in the Rose Bowl no matter what, because just, you know, the top team gets to pick which of the two. In this case, you know, the Sugar, right? The Sugar or the Rose Bowl, you know, they're going to. And, you know, just based on, you know, geography, the other teams ahead of them would always pick the Sugar. Michigan would pick the Rose anyway. So, but now with Florida State, you know, quarterback Jordan Travis getting hurt, that changes things a little bit because they're now in line potentially for that four seed. And I think there is a major advantage to being the one seed and playing them first in the semifinal. Yeah, as opposed to the other teams that would be in the mix for that three seed. So I actually, you know, winning is important. You know, I think if Georgia wins, they'll hold on to that one. But if they lose, you know, Michigan would jump, you think, probably to that top spot.
Yeah, you're right. I think head to head, I think Michigan matches up very well against Florida State. I don't think if you're Michigan, you don't want to play Georgia in the first game, the semifinal. I think that's not ideal. But yeah, I don't know if Georgia ends up one, I think they go to New Orleans. I think it's just geography perspective. They can bring the most fans there, and then Michigan ends up in the Rose. So I think there's a good shot Michigan ends up in Pasadena. That's probably the spot right now. But I mean, head to head, I like Michigan's chances against most of these top four or five teams. I mean, just you know, schematically, I think they could play with Washington. They could play with Florida State. They could play with Oregon. Georgia is the iffy spot here. I think they match up very well just from a physicality perspective. I think they have elite talent, probably more so than Michigan. And if you're the Wolverines, you're looking at best case scenario here, right? And right now they've got to win a playoff game. They haven't been able to do it. Jim Harbaugh's only one bowl game in his entire tenure at Michigan. So I think that's goal number one. I mean, obviously getting there, but winning a game and then worrying about the national championship. And the last thing you want is to play Georgia first, I think.
Outside of Florida State, I think any matchup for Michigan would be really intriguing. I mean, Michigan-Oregon would be fascinating, and I really like Oregon's offense. I would love to see how Michigan would do against an offense like that. I mean, Michigan-Texas is obviously two blue bloods. You got the Xavier Worthy angle there too. I mean, that I feel like would be an interesting matchup. Michigan-Alabama potentially. I mean, it seems like it will be a more intriguing matchup this year than Michigan-TCU. I mean, obviously it ended up being a good game, but it's not like anyone was like, yeah, wow, we did a TCU-Michigan matchup in the playoff. This year, I think, will be a little bit different of a case, unless it is Michigan-Florida State without Jordan Travis. I mean, that would be more like the TCU-Michigan vibes where everyone's like, all right, Michigan's almost like a guaranteed bye there and a win. And then obviously we know what ended up happening.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about Georgia. I think, yeah, they win, they hold on to that top spot. That's more likely a potential championship matchup. But, yeah, I just think there's a little bit of a drop-off between, you know, Oregon, Washington, you know, Texas, whoever, you know, those other teams are, to Florida State potentially. But it is interesting. You know, you have more often than not, these four teams have been evident by the end of the, you know, when it's time to pick them. But we just don't know. I mean, if you know, if Georgia, you know, Michigan, Washington, say, and Florida State win, or even just probably regardless, the Pac-12 winner is that other team, then it becomes pretty easy. But any of those teams start losing, it gets very interesting, especially since Texas played Alabama, you know, and beat them in Tuscaloosa. So that, you know, that head to head would probably give them the edge. But then what happens? Does the SEC get completely shut out? Do Texas and Alabama go, and Georgia doesn't go? It gets very interesting for those other, you know, two or three spots.
That's why they play the games, and we'll watch it play out Saturday, and it should be fun. It's nice, and some, like, I don't like the 8 o'clock kickoff of the Big Ten championship game just because it's so dang late, and like it's a quick turnaround for everybody involved. But you do get to watch the other games play out and see who wins and loses, and you kind of get an idea, kind of going into the Big Ten title game, what had happened, where Michigan potentially stands, and what needs to happen. So the players and the coaches will have a good idea of what's going on going into 8 o'clock once they take the field at Lucas Oil Stadium.
And there's Ohio State too. I mean, last year they of course lost to Michigan and still got in. Yeah, they're not out of it yet by any means. I think they're in worse shape than they were last year, where they only really needed that USC loss. This year, they probably need a little more help than that, but they're not completely done yet as far as their playoff chances. We will have continued coverage of Michigan-Iowa in the Big Ten Championship. Leading up to that game, we'll have another podcast, you know, diving a little more deeper into that matchup. And you can read all about it on mlive.com/Wolverines. Thanks for listening.